Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon. This is the sixth serial, The Aztecs, which consists of four episodes. The Temple of Evil, The Warriors of Death, The Bride of Sacrifice, and The Day of Darkness, which aired from May 23rd, 1964 to June 13th, 1964. And today we have with us another guest that was one of my groomsmen.
Yeah,
and we're just
going to
use them all up.
To keep going through the wedding party.
He's a frequent writing partner. He co-created Monsters Anonymous. He does a bunch of other cool videos. He did The Reverend, which you may have seen on the Dr. Horrible sing-along blog DVD.
He also did that song that you guys just listened to.
Yeah, he did our theme song. He does a lot of cool music. He has a lot on his website, swinglish.nu.
I wouldn't say a lot. That website, I should really update it. It has dead links on it.
Well, you should fix it by the time this podcast goes up.
I won't have.
It links to your SoundCloud, though, right?
Yeah, bruh, check out my SoundCloud.
And you also, he's also a part of a group called Ill Eden, which is fantastic. I'll just let him talk more about himself.
Yeah.
So this is Vincent E.L.
Yeah, that's my name. I'm in case you can't tell by my very, very, very thick accent, I am in fact Swedish, and I am also a rapper and all around musician. I made the theme song for Atop the Fourth Wall. It's probably what some people are going to recognize me from, but I also do other things.
Yeah, I knew I was going to leave something out.
Yep.
Yeah, that's probably your most popular thing.
Yeah, it's not like any of the other things I've done, so it's not like it's representative of me. It's more representative of that show. Anyway.
Well, you do a lot of theme songs in general, because you've done that one. You do the one for my show, Projections Project. You did the Monsters Anonymous theme song. This podcast itself.
Yeah, that happened. I occasionally dabble in theme songs. It's not really my main thing, but I occasionally, when I feel inspired, will make a theme song. But that does not mean that people can just contact me and go, hey, I want a theme song for free. That's not gonna happen.
Right, we're just special.
All I heard was, please contact me and say, hey, I want a theme song for free.
Yeah, no, people have done that. People have contacted me and been like, hey, can you make me a theme song? And I'm like, what's your budget? And they're like, no answer.
None budget. Which is why you have to befriend him first. That's...
Yeah. I do get all my stuff for free.
Yeah, that helps. It, like, if you're my friend and you make a podcast that in two episodes becomes my favorite podcast, I'll make you a theme song for free. Because that's how I roll.
Aw, yeah. So what podcast is that?
That would be this one.
This one? Yeah. We're somebody's favorite.
This podcast that I've now heard three episodes of, but I hadn't by the time I made the theme song. And I'm really waiting for the two episodes that go before the one that I'm recording right now. I am really looking forward to finding out what has happened in the past.
We did them and they're great.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to listening to them because I'm really enjoying the show. It's super fun. And I'm not just saying that because you're my friends.
That Aww. Makes me happy.
So, before we get into the episode itself, tell us a little bit about, like, your involvement with Doctor Who, how much you've seen, what have you seen, etc.
Okay, so I think I started by watching The Christmas Invasion, and then I went back and watched the season before it with the Ninth Doctor, and then I went back and watched, I think I watched the TV movie from 96, and then I watched the rest of all the modern stuff until I got caught up, which was probably like two seasons in or something. I think it was like mid second season of the revival. And then I've since gone back and watched some of the classic stuff, like here and there. Like I've watched some of the Fourth Doctor, and I watched, you know, a bit here and there. And then I've gone back and watched a good chunk in order of the First Doctor. I'm a little bit ahead of the show, but I went back and rewatched the Aztecs.
Have you been watching like missing serials as well or no?
Sort of not. I've been skipping some, and I've been watching some.
The ones that are bearable to watch, you watch?
Yeah, like, if it's unbearable, I'm not watching it. But if it's like, most of the parts are there, but some of the parts are sort of partially reconstructed, and there are some bits, I'll watch those. But if it's like, all of the episodes are missing, I'm like, skip.
Ah, so you...
Marco Polo.
So you skipped Marco Polo?
I tried to start watching Marco Polo, and then I was like, no, I'm not gonna get through this.
See, but that's why you can just listen to the podcast later.
Yeah.
And be like, I have a general idea of what happened, albeit out of order and all jumbled up.
Because but... that's our next episode. It's
oh, fun.
For you.
Yeah.
You guys have already heard it that are listening.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We're in the future.
That's the one with Ray.
I still don't understand.
Yeah, time travel. It's wibbly wobbly.
You say you've seen a bit here and there. Have you seen at least every Doctor, or is there some that you're not as familiar with?
Well, I guess it depends on what counts as having seen. I mean, I've seen, like, clips of every Doctor. I haven't seen full serials of every Doctor. I've definitely seen a whole bunch of serials of the first Doctor. I've seen, like, a couple, maybe three or four serials of the fourth Doctor. I've seen the eighth and onward, and I've listened to serials of the eighth Doctor. But yeah, I've sort of got stray stuff here and there, and then, like, eight and onward, I've got everything pretty much. I haven't listened to absolutely all of the eighth Doctor audios, but I've listened to most of them. I've got a few left.
We'll probably be doing that way in the future whenever we...
Sure, when we're totally still making this podcast in the future.
Yeah, I think we will. We're doing good so far. I think
we
should
already...
jump...
Four episodes further in than I thought we'd get.
Yeah. Five. Serials. Wait, six. This is six, I think. Oh, I'm so lost.
I mean, I assumed we'd do, like, at least one. That was the one that I counted.
This is the sixth serial.
Yes.
Okay. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Aztecs. First episode is The Temple of Evil.
That's, of course, a very non-judgmental title.
I'm a little sad that it's a temple and not a cave.
There's no cave in this serial. This is our second serial without a cave.
Really?
There are tunnels and stuff, though.
I would almost say the tunnel into the tomb and all that. I would say that basically is a cave.
It's cave-like.
It's not a natural cave. It's a man-made cave, but it is... It is a cave.
It's another very trapdoor-heavy serial. Like, it's something that someone just figured out. And they're like, we must use this a billion times.
Because it seems like in most of these serials, it's like, let's get them stuck somewhere, and the TARDIS is not accessible. And in this case, it's the TARDIS is stuck behind a trapdoor that only opens one way.
In the Temple of Evil.
In the Temple of Evil. Which is pretty much, this is how that episode starts.
Wait, is the tomb the temple, or is the temple the stuff outside of the tomb where they're gonna kill the guy?
Yeah, sure.
Whatever it is, it's evil.
Because I feel like, you know, if it's the Temple of Evil, the temple, isn't that the other place? I mean, the tomb is the tomb and the temple is the temple, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so
and
we
the
should say...
the pellet with the poison. No, it's in the...
Ben's Glory?
Ben's Glory. Okay.
Wait, are we saying that there's some kind of connection between the tomb and the temple?
I don't get it.
But we should say, okay, so they land in the tomb.
In
which
the tomb.
May or may not also be the temple. We don't know. We don't know if the tomb is evil or good. It's just a tomb.
Yeah, there's a dead person in there.
And it's then... the tomb of moral, like, objectiveness.
It's the morally gray tomb.
They step out of the TARDIS in an Aztec tomb, and Barbara instantly gets into the spirit of casual grave robbery.
She touches...
With no regard for history, the dead, or other people's property.
She touches everything and just is like, yeah, this is nice.
She's like shoplifting, but in a grave.
Just very casually grave robbing?
Grave robbing.
Grave robbing.
They're both Susan and Barbara, like both of them.
They're like, oh, this is nice. I'll take one of these. And
yeah, they just start grabbing stuff.
Barbara puts that snake thing on her wrist. Like, she just wears it.
And it's like, this is a holy place, probably, that belongs to a people that have since, you know, gone the way of history. And they're just fucking stealing shit.
Well, that's like her... She's a history teacher, and that's the thing that she specialized in.
Yeah, so shouldn't she have some, like, respect for history?
I get it from Susan, but not from Barbara. Because Susan's like, look at these cartoons on the wall.
No, yeah, I expect more from Barbara.
Yeah. Now, that being said, this is a pretty great Barbara episode.
Yes.
It's a big Barbara episode. I don't know about great Barbara episode, but...
Any episode that focuses a lot on Barbara, to me, is great.
Yeah. She has a lot of qualities that remind me of Donna in this episode, specifically.
Yeah, there's a lot about this episode that watching it reminds you of Fires of Pompeii. And all I could think was, they get along so well.
Another thing I noticed in that scene, like after the shoplifting happens, Barbara just sort of looks around and goes, it's perfect. For what? What, you're going to decorate this place and live here? Like, I'll take it.
Well, she does. She takes everything. She takes some things.
I mean, ends up mostly working out for her.
Well, that's the point where some dude with a mullet shows up and she gets arrested.
Yeah.
But she has the snake that she stole on her wrist, and they're like, well, you must be a god, because that's how TV works.
And everybody goes out, and the TARDIS is left behind the trapdoor, and they cannot open it again, because nobody has a, you know, a sledgehammer.
Why would they have a sledgehammer?
I don't know.
Wait, I think the arrest happens outside of the tomb. I think she goes outside of the tomb and looks around and goes, it's perfect. And that's when she gets arrested, because then the others step out and they find that she's missing. And Ian looks out at a matte painting and exclaims, we must be pretty high up here.
What a beautiful view.
It looked like a curtain almost, because like I saw ripples on like far left side.
Yeah, and he goes, we must be pretty high up here. Like, wouldn't you be absolutely certain that you're pretty high up there if you're just looking out at the view? Like, you would go, yeah, we're high up. Not, we must be pretty high up here. Because, I mean, someone sure is.
To be fair, it's Ian, and he's never really certain about the things he ought to be certain about. And he's super certain about the things that he just made up.
Yeah, that is true. If you're going to boil down Ian to a basic character description, I think it boils down to man. I think that's probably what it said in the like description of Ian when they were like plotting out the shows, where it's like, okay, what kind of character is Ian? Oh, he's a man. What does he do? He does stuff that men, you know, stereotypically do. Stereotypical man shit. He's action guy, and he's like dad guy, and he's like camp leader guy, and he's the guy who just makes assumptions about shit and is totally certain about it. And like, he's everything that a stereotypical man would be.
Ian's like adventure dad.
I feel like he gets a lot of the stuff that the Doctor would be doing now, too, because the Doctor is so old, he doesn't do the action
stuff. And kind of
stuff.
Gray, morally gray right now. A lot of the morality from the show comes from Ian and really? Barbara.
Yeah.
When they give Barbara things to do, it comes from Barbara.
I feel like Ian is the guy who in a Russell T. Davis episode would die instantly.
He is, and that's why I love him.
Because he is like, so I'm gonna do this my way, and then, you know, normally in a Russell T. Davis episode, that means you're gonna die because you need to listen to the Doctor, and Ian never listens to the Doctor, and this Doctor is probably not someone you should listen to because he hasn't figured shit out yet. He's a young old guy.
So what else happens in this episode besides?
Oh, I have everything written down. I've written down everything that happens.
Because I never.
So
know.
After he says that we must be pretty high up here, he then states that the place seems absolutely deserted based on very little looking around. Yeah, he looks around for like 3 seconds and he goes, this place seems absolutely deserted.
They make that conclusion all the time, though. And then Susan sees someone and everyone's like, no, Susan.
Yeah, Susan.
You didn't see anyone. Come because on. Ian just said 5 seconds ago that this place must be deserted.
Yes, and Ian is never wrong about anything. I think that's when the tomb closes. And Ian feels around. He feels around on the door for like 2 seconds before again stating something with absolute certainty. There's nothing to get a grip on.
Not even gonna try? No.
I will give Ian, he might be the person in RTD era who would die, but he does justifiably get himself knocked out a lot. Just knocked out and captured because he's being dumb. So he's got that at least.
He's got that going for him.
So yeah, the trap door closes.
And then Susan and the Doctor declare that the door can only be opened from the inside, based on, again, nothing.
Well, at least they're not exploring every option like they tend to do. They're progressing the plot a bit faster than normal.
Yeah, I'm willing to take their word for it if it means we can go do other interesting things, which is Doctor Who.
At least it's not like, let's see, how do we get across this canyon? Let's test out every available option and then watch every single person jump across said canyon. At least this time it's like, the TARDIS is stuck, let's get out of here.
Let's go on an adventure and make a story happen.
Well, except the thing that happens is that the dude with the mullet shows up again. He's the High Priest of Knowledge, Otlock. There's also another guy, the sacrifice guy, Butcher. dude, high priest of sacrifice.
The very stereotypical villain.
God, he was so evil. He was great.
Yeah, and he had paint on his face.
And he, like, really liked hugging this one boulder on the set.
He got all these very nice, like, close-ups of the face.
With this very probably offensive makeup.
And he got to say evil things directly to the audience. With people standing, probably in earshot.
There's quite a lot of that, of him being like, evil plan, evil plan, evil plan. And like, and even in like, the same shot.
He's a worse over-actor than Ortlock and Susan combined.
He'll be saying evil plan, evil plan. And in the exact same shot, in the background, you can see like Ian or somebody. Like,
but it's Ian. So he's like,
that's true. He's like, doo-doo-doo.
And I was unclear on if his evil plan was like an evil plan, or if it was a stupid plan, evil plan. Meaning, I'm not sure if he really believes that the gods want blood in order to remove the moon from the sun, or...
I don't think so. I think he just likes killing people, and he'd be really annoyed if that was taken from him.
He just wants the power of his job. He doesn't want to lose his job, so he's like, yeah, we're gonna kill a guy, because that's how you remove a moon from a sun. Everybody knows that.
There are scenes between him and the knowledge guy, the high priest of knowledge, or whatever he
Ortlock.
Is. Sure.
Ortlock, is that it?
And I think it's Ortlock.
He's like, you know, killing people's not, like, it's gonna rain whether we kill someone or not. And he's like, maybe, but I like killing people, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and also if he was, like, so gung-ho about the gods, he'd probably be a little less wary of Barbara. Which, that's what happens next, right?
They meet up with Barbara, and Barbara has been crowned white colonial fantasy cliche number one.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm kind of a huge fan of Barbara just ending up queen of places.
Yeah, this is the second time that it's happened. Like, in the Keys of Marinus, they lose Barbara, and then they walk into a place, and Barbara is being treated like a queen. So like, this is, like, a recurring thing for her.
As cliched and admittedly awful as it is, she plays it so well, like, in character, like, yeah, I'm royalty now. It makes it enjoyable.
She's like, about time.
Yeah. She puts up with so much shit on the TARDIS that she's just like, yeah, this is fair.
But she's such a cliche white person coming into a place where there are people who are not white people and, you know, gets crowned something, because that's what happens when white people step in. You become their king or queen or something. Such a cliche.
To be fair, I don't think there are any non-white people in this episode.
Well, yeah, they're all white people, but they're playing non-white, which, again, that's also another thing that's... okay.
Yeah, anytime you have a historical episode that is, like, the least bit not in English, kind of like, well... We'll just watch it. We'll just enjoy it for what it is. And
I wonder if that's why they eventually stopped doing historicals. Is like
they can't figure out how to not be awful.
Yeah, and also it's probably like it's hard to fake it in general.
Like in the scene where it was revealed that Barbara was crowned white colonial fantasy cliche, she's being a sociopath. Her reaction to being crowned white colonial fantasy cliche is like, yeah, and yeah. You're gonna do what I say. She just embraces it like that. And I'm scared of Barbara.
You should be. Like I said, she just takes to it. And she's like, yeah, no, I'm a goddess. And there's like something in her demeanor changes completely. And she becomes very stoic. And I like to think that it just comes from being like ignored all the time on the TARDIS. That she's like, yes. Or white. Let's be honest. That's... It probably comes more from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, she takes to it immediately and is a little bit frightening.
Also, I just want to point out she's wearing this, like, flower hat that at one point continually blocks the doctor from the shot. You can see the camera person desperately trying to get the doctor back in shot. And, like, Barbara keeps turning her head and, like, blocking the doctor again and again.
You could sense their annoyance, and I've never, like, identified with someone more.
Than the camera guy?
Yeah, I work in production. I can just hear their inner monologue, like, who thought that hat was a good idea, first of all? Second of all, tell her to quit moving her head.
I feel like that's a very important thing for a show like this, that it has people they can identify with.
And that's a very classic Who thing. I mean, they, at this point in time, they did not refilm a lot of stuff. So it's like, eh, he's saying the lines. You can't see him, but he's saying the lines.
And he said them right all the way through. That's never going to happen again.
He's saying a line and then correcting himself. There's a lot of that, too. Mostly the Doctor, but occasionally someone else starts to say a thing and then corrects themselves.
It was really bad in our last serial, The Keys of Marinus. But this one, it's still there, but not as bad.
Keys of Marinus, like, makes you wonder, did they, like, have to film a lot of it super early? That's the kind of acting that we were getting. Like, no one was quite awake yet.
So then what happens? It's because I'm looking at my notes and I don't know.
Okay, Otluck and the Butcher decide that Ian should be trained to command their army because he's Action Ian. That's another thing that's like, they instantly notice, oh, you should command our army. And it's like, why?
You look like someone's rugged dad.
Yeah, you should probably be our, you know, general.
And then they give him a hat. Barbara has a hat, so Ian gets a hat too, and it's this magnificent bird thing. I love it.
Doesn't the bird thing happen later? Doesn't he steal that?
Yes, but I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I think he steals that from a cat.
Well, no, he had a hat earlier.
He has it before he steals it.
Oh, okay, because I thought he stole a thing from a guard.
That happens way later, but he also has a hat earlier as well.
Yeah, and that's when the other guy's a cat, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Ian goes to train with the other warrior, right?
Yeah, well, I will say Ian doesn't accept quite as quickly as Barbara, but he's still pretty quick to accept it. At least with, like, Barbara, it's like, you want to be a god? Barbara's like, hell yeah. I don't know why you'd be, like, going to be a warrior? No, not really. I don't want to be head of, like, an army. That sounds awful. I'm a science teacher.
Yeah, but you're a white guy. You gotta lead your army.
Like, he's so concerned about the situation that he's in, because he's Ian, but he doesn't, like, want anyone to know that he's concerned, because he's supposed to be a warrior, I guess. He ends up making the most delightful face the entire time of, oh god, oh god, oh god, oh god, what's happening? How do I get out of this? But I'm totally being stoic and action-y, right? That's how it's reading, right? And it's great.
And then there's a stick fight, right?
There's a very slow paddle fight.
Yeah, he has to train with the worst stage fighter in all of pretend South America, Ixta, who is super cocky for a guy whose martial art can be summarized as slowly waving objects around.
They have, like, these paddles, and they just very slowly tap them together. And that's a fight scene.
And it's that thing where they're not swinging at each other, they're swinging at the sticks.
Right.
The cricket bats or whatever they are.
So we have that really slow, boring fight scene, and then we have the best fight scene ever, in which Ian is a total badass.
When is that? Is that now?
That's later.
Oh yeah, that's later. You're jumping
okay,
all over
the
place.
I'll wait. I'll be patient. But I want to talk about it.
Doctor and the Gardener.
That's what's next.
He's totally laying the moves down.
So I've always been like, I don't know how I feel about the Doctor and romance and stuff. And then I completely forgot that this happened.
And you
ship it. This is the first Doctor. This is not something that, yeah. This is first season first Doctor.
Yeah, and he's being all pickup artist.
So there's this Gardener who, why does he end up talking to her in the first place?
They take the Doctor there because they're like, all the old folk go to this garden.
That's right.
And they hang out and just talk about wisdom and shit.
Away from us.
Yeah. We just stay there. We don't want you in society, but, you know, if we need help, we'll come to you. That's...
But you're smart. We might ask you questions.
Yeah. But you're not good for anything, really.
So the Doctor is totally meddling by flirting with this Gardener.
Yeah. I don't know how much of that is intentional flirting or... I know he's trying to get information from her, but I don't know if he realizes how flirty he's actually being.
Like, he's being friendly to get information, but doesn't realize that he's being flirty.
It might be that he was possibly written as less flirty, but then acted it very flirty. Because that could be on Hartnell.
That's true. I do like that whole dynamic there. Because it is kind of cute.
It is pretty cute, yeah.
Yeah, and then Ian shows up, and the Doctor's like, don't interfere. And then he goes to Barbara, who's all, I'm going to ban human sacrifice. And the Doctor's like, yeah, no, we might solve a mystery, but don't rewrite history, DuckTales. Woo! In modern terms, fixed point in time. He's telling Ian, don't meddle. And then he goes to Barbara and is like, don't meddle. And then right back to the Gardener, hey. Meddle, meddle.
I mean, that's very, you know,
that's very
the
Doctor.
Yeah, he's like, you guys can't do it, but I can. Because I'm the Doctor and I'm smart. But he's not really.
The Doctor is kind of meddling in order to get out.
though. That's true.
He tells Ian not to meddle. That's when Ian shows up with his ridiculous bird hat
on. Bird hat and his very concerned eyes.
I actually read, you were on Tumblr and looking up the tag for it and stuff. There's a bit from a commentary where, like, the guy who plays Ian, he did the commentary for that, this serial, and it's like, when he came on with the hat, he didn't realize it was him at first until he started talking. He's like, oh, that's me. I completely forgot about that. That is a ridiculous hat. That would be a hat I would try to keep.
If you got to steal one prop, it would be the hat.
It'd be the hat.
So the doctor goes to Barbara, by the way, and is like, hey, don't meddle. And that's the scene that I mentioned that felt very Fires of Pompeii, where Barbara's like, stop me. It's like, I can't not do anything. I'm gonna have to try.
Because I don't want people killing people. Which, that's...
There was a noble intent, I think.
Yeah. I think there's a noble intent there, and I think the doctor is being kind of callous about it. He's not taking the time to sort of really sort of let it sink in, the idea that maybe meddling with time. He's just sort of going, no, don't do it. He's not really convincing anyone.
At no point does it occur to him to address the mechanics of it or the emotional side of it. He's just like, no, don't do it. I said so, I know best.
Yeah, he doesn't say anything about fixed points in time. And those dragon things that come out of portals. But that's later.
And also never happens again.
Yeah.
So, and then the sacrifice is going to happen. And Barbara's like, no, don't do it. And then the sacrificial victim's like, but my honor. And like, straight up kills himself. Suicide number three.
Wait, does he kill himself?
He jumps off the cliff.
He jumps off the ledge.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. Like, he's like, I'm supposed to do this. This is my thing, you know? I was going to be honored and blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, stereotypical villains like...
I thought he came back later.
There's another guy.
Oh, there's a second guy who's going to be... He's the bench guy.
Yeah.
He's the
Well, this sacrifice is not for the eclipse. This sacrifice is for rain.
Which is why Barbara was trying to keep the sacrifice from happening so it would rain.
And then they'd be like, oh, I guess those things are just coincidental.
So he's disappointed and he kills himself. And the butcher is also super disappointed. He's so super disappointed that he breaks the fourth wall.
Yeah. For the, I guess, the cliffhanger. He just straight up walks to the camera and is like, screw Barbara. Right, guys?
What is it? It's like, I'm so mad at her that I just might destroy her. But like, right into your eyes.
So does it rain? Did that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, he jumps off the cliff and then it starts to rain.
Or so, like, I think like you hear thunder and stuff. Yeah, that's the third suicide we've had in the first season of Doctor Who.
Space camp.
Three suicides.
Yeah, suicide was not as taboo back then, I guess. I mean, have you seen Tom and Jerry?
But yeah, it does rain. I have a note here that says, rain! Exclamation point. So
we know that it rains. Is that the...
That is the end of the first episode, and we are now on to the Warriors of Death. The blank of blank.
Noun of scary things.
It's like Mad Libs with these episode titles.
I think that's exactly how they named them, is they had this like printout of scary adjective, noun, and then just the thing with the blank of blank. And they'd be like, all right, guys, give me a scary adjective.
Maybe loosely connected to the plot. Maybe.
If not, we'll just have them get there by the end of the episode.
For this episode and the next episode, it's Susan Light, because I think she was on vacation, so they pre-filmed her stuff. She's like shoved aside into a school for these next two episodes.
Yeah, she offends someone somehow and has to get, like, sent to school to learn the ways of the Aztecs. And she gets really good at it. And I just think about her having that knowledge for the rest of her life.
Yeah, like, she's memorized a lot of Aztec stuff. And it's just there.
It's probably in her brain forever now.
So, how do we start off Warriors of Death?
The episode opens with the doctor scolding Barbara for wanting to save some guy's life, because that's meddling. Unlike the thing where she's robbing graves and pretending to be a god / reincarnation of some high priest, because that's obviously totally fine. Which, by the way, is she supposed to be a god or a reincarnation of a high priest? Because that seems to be going back and forth.
At first, she's this high priest who's been reincarnated, but then it's like, well, if she's a god, she'll be immortal. But I'm like, she was the high priest, and he's dead.
Maybe the high priest was a god.
Yeah, but he died.
But, like, was the high priest, like, a reincarnation of the god? Like, is that part of their they don't really explain the relationship between the high priest and god. Plus, they have high priests of everything. They have Ovlog, who's the high priest of knowledge, and they have the butcher guy, who's the high priest of sacrifice. And it's like, Do they just have a bunch of high priestesses? Priests.
Where are your lower priests?
Yeah, exactly. Is there no, like, priest ranking? Is it just high priest? Are all the priests fucking high?
Somebody was.
That's religion.
Ian's like, you must be a very high priest. You seem to be a very high priest from this altitude.
Maybe that's just what it is. They're priests of the place that tie up.
Then the butcher guy is like, I'm going to test the knowledge of Barbara, and just goes fake god girl on her, right?
Yeah.
Fake high priest girl test.
And that's, of course, Barbara's specialty, and so she knows all the answers.
But it's like, it's questions that you would expect any Aztec to probably know. Like, this should be common knowledge, right? Because he's like, how many heavens are there? And it's like, wouldn't they all know that? And Barbara's like, 13, duh. And he's like, name them. And it's like, wouldn't they all be able to name them? Like, how does this prove anything? He knows it, right? So is he a god?
Maybe it's secret high priest knowledge.
From the high priest club.
So it's like medieval Catholicism, where it's like only the priests get to know the stuff and the people just get to listen to a bunch of Latin?
Yes. I don't know anything about the Aztecs. I feel like maybe this episode should have taught us things.
Well, that's, I think, what it was trying to do in that scene, but not very well. Well, there's 13 heavens. What are they? I don't know. We didn't research it that much. Just have her deflect it.
But this programming's definitely EI.
Yeah.
Was that even a thing? EI?
No, they only had the predecessor, which was EIO.
So angry right now.
You should be.
God damn it. I don't know your time about anymore.
Anyway, so Barbara's like, talk to the hand, because I only talk to Otlock. And Ian's hanging out with a crappy warrior guy.
Then here's the scene.
The scene! The Ian... thing that happens! It happens now!
Action Ian comes with a kung fu grip, or like a Vulcan nerve pinch.
Thumb. So, just his thumb.
Ian has been made this warrior, and he's not like real thrilled about it, but he's going along with it anyway. What's the other warrior's name?
Ixtar.
Ixtar? He's like the guy who's like set up to like lead. But he's not yet.
Because of the white dude.
He's like bragging because he can throw a spear into a board of wood. And Ian's like, that's impressive, I guess. It's really not, but whatever.
But I can defeat you with my thumb.
I was going to say, if you think that's cool, wait till you see what I can do with my thumb. And he's like, what? Whoa, where are we going here?
Yeah, Ian takes, like, he puts his thumb, I guess, into some...
nerve.
In the back of the dude's neck. And he, like, can't move and he can't get free. It's great.
He passes out.
What I was thinking when he went, you should see what I could do with my thumb. Like, I'm like, he should do that trick where you make it look like you take off half of your thumb.
That would be great. If I had a time machine, that's what I would use it for. Is to just go back in the past and be like, hey guys, check this out.
For those who are listening and can't see, Tony is doing the thumb thing.
Of course.
You nerd. I love you.
Probably couldn't make fire. I probably couldn't make a toaster. But I could do this.
So Ixtar is defeated, but he's like, yo, that's a cheap trick.
And I was not prepared for that.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for that. And so then, like, a rematch is planned without Ian's knowledge, though. Like, it's just, like, the butcher and Ixtar and I think maybe the victim? I don't remember. It was some third dude, and they're all like...
The victim's involved in it somehow. I don't remember why he cares, because he's gonna die.
He's talking to the butcher and the warrior and I think some other guy, and they're talking about the duel, and the butcher bribes the warrior with abstract concepts. He's like, hey, if you do this, if you kill him, you get honor and glory. It's like, yeah, it's cool. Can I have some cash?
I think that is when they introduce the perfect victim, is what they call him.
Is that how they convince him to help? Is that, like, we'll sacrifice you if you help us? Is that...
I don't remember. I just remember they called him the perfect victim, and I'm like, that dude is pretty darn attractive. He is, like, stereotypically, like, hunky.
He's almost... thaw-like.
But yeah, like, they're like, we'll let you fight Ian again at some point. And we'll promise we won't let him use his thumbs. We'll put him in, like, one of those finger traps. Thumb cuffs. Something.
He'll be wearing oven mitts.
He's powerless.
Or anti-radiation gloves.
This is the callback episode. I like it. So then we go back
to the doctor. The doctor is working his pickup mojo on the gardener, though.
Yeah, he just flirt some more. Oh. That's pretty much all that happens. But that scene ends with a zoom in on the doctor looking happy and cheerful, like...
But dramatic music plays, yeah. And it's super unsettling.
Like, I think it's supposed to be, he's happy, and this is a good thing, but they... The next scene to segue it, and it doesn't work. It just looks like the doctor is evil.
I thought it was supposed to be kind of like, he's up to something, and he's like, ha, my meddling is working.
Which, I don't know. It came off too creepy.
By the way, the reason why he's meddling and flirting with the gardener is because he wants to know if she knows anything about the temple, so they can get back into it, so they can get back to the TARDIS.
Right.
And she does know the...
She knew the guy, but, like, he's dead.
But his son, who we don't know yet, but I'll tell you. Spoilers. Is the victim.
No, it's Ixta.
I think it's Ixta.
Ixta?
Without the R. I think so. That's what I had written down, and I think I got it off the wiki. I'm not sure.
Ixta.
Well, you're probably right.
Well, they may have been saying Ixta, and it sounded like Ixta.
Well, because they also say, how do they call Ian in this episode?
Oh, I don't know. They, like, overpronounce it.
The A.
So Ian.
Ian. That's what it is.
So, Ixta. It's probably like Ixta, and I just heard Ixtar.
Whatever his name.
Ixta. Let's say Ixta.
Ixta is the guy who knows about the temple and potentially how to get back into it. The gardener arranges a meeting. Am I jumping ahead or am I...
I'm honestly not 100%
on track.
Sure.
I think the meeting arranging happens on the next flirting scene, because I haven't written it down on this one.
It happens at some point, though, you guys. You guys, it happens.
I'll just tell you. So the gardener, arranges this meeting. And the doctor, by the way, doesn't know anything that's going on with Ian at all, because he spent all his time flirting. And he doesn't know anything that's going on with Barbara at all, because he's been flirting. So he meets with...
Let's leave off the meeting, because we're about to it. Let's talk about a couple little things between that. Then we have more of Susan learning how to be a housewife. That's the next scene.
Oh, yeah!
The next scene after the flirting... with the doctor and the gardener is more with Barbara and the butcher filler. And then the gardener and the warrior have a chat about the doctor or something.
No, yeah, I skipped over all that because it's boring.
And then Otlock, the high priest of knowledge in the front and party in the back, quizzes Susan on the code of the good housewife because patriarchy. And then Susan questions arranged marriage. And the rest of the code was apparently totally fine. Then the doctor has another filler scene with a talking cat.
By the way, this is the second or third time that arranged marriages has come up.
Definitely with King Cho and Marco Polo. That was like a whole big arranged marriage thing. Every time it's like Susan like being very against arranged marriage. So what's your theory?
I don't know what is established as far as the actual canon goes, but it makes me wonder if that is like intentional. I at least have a theory that, like, maybe that's why they left Gallifrey in the first place. Like, maybe it's a thing on Gallifrey.
Arranged
marriage. Susan's like, F that.
Had they even thought of Gallifrey yet? I mean, I get the sense that the subtext that they're going for is that Susan and the Doctor are from the future, and that they then later just sort of went, nah, they're from Gallifrey.
I think they've flat out said that they're from another planet, or they've talked about their home planet.
They talked about they couldn't go home, or they would one day get back home, is what they said.
I think they specifically talked about... I don't know. I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but I just get the sense that that's what they were going for, is the future. I don't know. It doesn't really matter now, because that's not the canon at this point. I mean, there is no canon, but blah, 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 blah.
So, yeah, the doctor and the cat mask guy, which is Ixta, right?
A talking cat?
Voiced by the master from the 8th Doctor movie.
Oh.
Yeah, talking cat is the master. I don't know if you knew that. The more you know.
Thanks.
But yeah, they talk, and I think that's when...
There's the thing with the plant.
Yeah, he's like, I need help in this fight. And the doctor's like, well, I'll help you if you'll help me. Doctor's like, I know some horticulture.
Here, take this plant.
Does he, like, stick a needle through it?
He puts a pin through a leaf and is like, if you scratch who you're fighting, it'll make him tired.
Do it on the wrist, because that's where the juice will enter the most efficiently. And he's helping Ixta basically defeat Ian without realizing it. Ixta does know, but he's doing this in exchange for information about how to get back into the tomb. The tomb of moral greatness.
Yes. The morally gray tomb.
Ian's practicing his flailing guitar, and the butcher is like, bro, do you even lift? The warrior with the cat hat comes in, and it's like, want me to kill him? And the butcher's like, yep. And I'm like, didn't we just have this conversation a few scenes ago?
Ian, by the way, is in the background of this scene, not even 2 feet away. Just being oblivious.
Yeah, he's in the soundproof booth. The invisible soundproof booth. He's wearing the headphones and
he's in the cone of silence.
They probably like, no, he's dumb.
He doesn't know what they're talking about. Kill who? Are they talking about the sacrifice?
Then do we have the Barb test?
Yes, Barbara's talking to Outlock. Barbara's talking to Outlock and she's like, so I'm like a god and stuff, right? Probably, yeah. Okay, so system update. Sacrifice is no longer necessary. The weather's automated or some shit. If you keep killing people, you're gonna run out of people, so don't do that. And then Outlock is like, well, think about it. The doctor hands Catman the plant with the thing, and then the butcher shows Doubt and the High Priest of Knowledge.
Did we already skip over the scene where the doctor comes back and pretty much yells at Barbara for interfering?
The doctor sneaks in to talk with Barbara. She's all, you're not supposed to be here. And he's all, that's nonsense. And then he gets arrested.
Gore what?
Yeah, that's when he finds out that, oh no, I've helped Ixta.
And I need to go warn Ian.
And then when he leaves, he gets captured because he wasn't supposed to be in there, but he didn't know he wasn't supposed to be in there, so.
But is this the scene where it's later?
I think it was actually earlier.
Or earlier? I just want to talk about it, and I don't remember when it happened.
I think it happened in the previous episode.
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. But there's a scene where we said the doctor's being really harsh with her, and she just kind of starts crying and is like, yep, I fucked up. This was not how I should have handled this situation, and I fucked up. And, like, the doctor's like, oh, no. Okay, wait, yeah, I was being harsh. And, like, has to sit with her and be like, no, it's cool, you made a mistake, it happens, and it's...
That might be later. I'm not even sure.
I don't remember, but I want to talk about it because it's touching and I like it.
There's a lot of the doctor having to sort of apologize to Barbara because he's a dick.
Yeah, well, the doctor is a dick, so... bound to happen.
Back where we were, the doctor realizes he has to go warn Ian.
But he gets caught because he wasn't supposed to be in the temple, but he didn't know he wasn't supposed to be in the temple.
He's like, that's nonsense. And then he gets arrested, like, immediately. Right after Barbara's like, you're not supposed to be here. And he's like, I'm supposed to be here. Oh, I'm not supposed to be here. Okay.
Barbara's basically like, yeah, but he didn't know. And they're like, all right, well, then we'll let him go then.
Well, I'll try to get him out, is what he says.
I'll go get his release.
We go to the fight.
She forbids the duel. And Utlock's all, someone's got to command our army. And Barbara's all, I'll pick the guy who's not Ian.
Yeah. Just make it not be Ian. And they're like, don't you want him to be it? He's like, it's not even like it's a fight to the death. Like, it's not that big of a deal. And Barb is like, fine. Just make sure that it stays not a fight to the death. And then the next scene happens, and it's the butcher going, so this is a fight to the death.
It's the slowest fight ever.
It's a hug fight, too. All of these, like, early doctor fight scenes are hug fights. It's people just hugging each other. That's all it is.
But here's my favorite part of this fight scene.
Oh, right.
That Ian, first of all, is doing relatively well. Better than you'd expect even a rugged science teacher to do. Until the doctor finally makes it there, runs up and says,
don't let him scratch you!
What? Ow! Like, what did you say? I think he just scratched me. Ian stops to listen to what the doctor is saying.
In reference to that, I wrote down, the doctor is the worst. He britted it.
The doctor caused the thing to happen by trying
twice
to warn him.
He taught him how to do it, and then he gave him the opportunity to actually do it.
And then Ian is like, oh my god, I got cut. Let me show the camera.
He gets cut all the way back there, and then slowly walks up to the camera and throws his wrist into the lens and is like, ow, do you see that? I'm bleeding.
Audience, do you see my boo-boo?
Yeah, the hat's out of the way, so it's fine. Says camera guy.
Camera's guy like, thank you for the consideration, Ian.
Somebody could learn a few things from Ian here.
What happens next?
Barbara shows up and is like, time out! And the butcher's like, why doesn't God heal amputees? I mean, if you're Yataxa, save him!
That is the end of The Warriors of Death. We are now on to The Bride of Sacrifice.
I love this episode.
As a way of saving the amputees, in order to save Ian, she puts a knife to the butcher's throat and gets what she wants. Because terrorism works!
It's basically like, stop it, or I'm gonna kill him. And then the butcher's like, that's not really what I meant. I wanted you to save him with God stuff.
She's like, it works though, right? Why use God stuff when
terrorism works?
Yeah. Barb turns slightly badass for a second.
She's drunk on godly power.
Yeah, and knifely power. And she tells Ortlok that the eclipse won't require a sacrifice to end, you know, which she has been saying for quite some time. Ortlok is all, oh, you better not be yanking my chain here. You better not be joshing me. You better be telling me the truth. Because otherwise, you know, we're going to get, like, Eternity of Darkness if you're, like, joking here.
Right, because there's an eclipse thing.
If you're wrong, the gods will be really mad with me.
Ixtar starts, like, gloating to Ian, like, ah, I beat you. Ah,
Wanna be best friends?
I use trickery like you use trickery with your thumb, right? We're best buds now. BFFs for life.
I'm totally gonna kill you later.
He's like, yeah, next time I'm totally killing you, but let's be bros till then.
BFFs for the remainder of your life.
I've made us necklaces.
BFR. Best friend's remainder.
My next note says Ixtar was lying about plans. He was lying to the doctor. He was just like, I just wanted to beat Ian, so yeah, I'm not going to help you with this temple thing.
The butcher is conspiring with some guy to poison Barbara, right?
Right. Yes. If she dies, she's fake.
So who's the guy? Is it the potions master or something? Is it Snape?
I thought it was the victim.
No, it wasn't the victim. It was this other guy.
It's another high priest. The high priest of potions.
It's the high priest of secondary characters.
High priest of juice.
Yeah, they're like, so we'll poison her if she dies. She's fake. If she doesn't die, well, hey, we just confirmed that she's a god, so.
Basically, they want to see if she weighs the same. Same as a duck.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a foolproof plan in their eyes. But yeah, like you were saying earlier, though, if she's a reincarnation of a dead person, then that person died before, so they're not immortal.
I don't think the writers, like, it was so long ago that they forgot that she wasn't a god.
Yeah, they just sort of went, ah, priest is god, same fucking shit.
We wrote that episode last week.
Who knows anymore?
We had, like, a flirting doctor thing. We should probably do more of that.
Yeah, he gets engaged to the gardener through a cocoa misunderstanding.
They use cocoa as, like, payment, I guess. It's currency.
The doc's like, that's a great idea. It's money and it's delicious.
Yeah, and the girl's like, yeah, you know about, like, our
hot cocoa customs.
Yeah, you know about, like, what it means. And the doctor's like, yeah, I do. Of course I do. We should have some. And she's like, what? Awesome. We're gonna get super married.
And then there's, like, a sitcom reaction. And the doctor's like, she's like, so when we get married?
And he's like, what? What?
That's exactly what happened.
That's the sound that face makes.
Wah, wah. I'm surprised that wasn't a sound cue.
I guess they hadn't invented that yet. That came like 2 years later.
So after that, Ian goes to Barbara and is like...
Ian finds out that they want to poison her.
Yeah, so he warns her.
Which the scene for that is great. Like, they go and they bring this drink and Barbara's like about to drink it. And Ian is in the background like flailing uncontrollably like, Barbara!
Yeah, that's the poison that Dad was talking about.
Can you see me?
So maybe...
I'm right in front of your face. Can you see me? Don't drink it.
Ian has discovered that the Aztecs have limited depth perception. Like, they can't see or hear shit behind them. So they think, oh, Ian's in the background. He can't hear us. Let's talk about evil plans. So that's what happened in this scene. Like, they don't know that I'm there when I'm behind them. So, hey, Barbara, stop. Don't drink that. He's, like, waiting, like, immediately behind them. And, like, he's been hiding that entire scene. And then Barbara's like...
Yeah, you drink first.
And they're like, no.
What she should have done, and this would have, like, basically, like, been one piece of evidence pointing to, I'm a god. Like, she could have just gone, there is poison in this drink. Because, like, having that knowledge, like, that would be a compelling argument.
Or somehow figure out a way to pretend to drink it and then not die. And then they would be like, well, you would have died anyway because you're a reincarnation of a high priest we just remembered and not an actual god.
Plot holes!
But yeah, she's like, here, you drink it instead. And then they are defeated.
She throws the cup onto the floor.
She's like, nobody goes against a companion when death is on the line.
She doesn't throw it at them. She throws it on the ground. She's an adult.
That is the first scene where the butcher dramatically grabs that rock.
That rock that he loves.
She's like chewing them out as they leave, and he just like walks into this rock. But then he like uses it as like, I am grabbing it with evil.
I meant to do that. Evilly.
I believe this is also when the Snape guy leaves and Barbara straight up comes out to the butcher and goes, yeah, I'm a false goddess. Totes, you're completely correct. And if you tell anyone, no one will believe you and they'll all shun you. Straight from the Catholic priest handbook.
Well, I have a note. It's like, Barb's like, yeah, I'm not a god, but fuck off.
I'm not a god. I am so much fucking scarier.
Actually, then that's when the doctor gets married, because he had to go make the cocoa and then come back.
Yes.
We've already went over that.
So. But not engaged.
Yeah, this is where the mugging happens.
Hot chocolate mugging.
Aw, it's a thing.
And then the bad guy is like, hey, let's marry off Susan. What? I don't even remember what the plan is exactly.
The plan is to get at Barbara through Susan.
Which is, let's marry her to the perfect victim.
Because he gets whatever he wants, because he's gonna die.
Yeah, that's their law. The human sacrifice gets whatever he wants.
And like, come on, Susan.
Except for to live.
He's a pretty hunky dude. He's a hunky victim.
Yeah, but he proposes and she's like, nah.
Just don't say.
Way too into this guy.
Just don't, I mean, give it a chance.
Just give it a chance.
Maybe be like, I don't want to marry you, but hey, let's go get some cocoa or something.
Maybe take me out to dinner.
It's on principle. She doesn't want to marry him because there's someone else who's saying that she should marry him. That's the point. She doesn't want it because it's not her idea.
There's a lot of, like, marriage plans going on here. Like, first off, the doctor accidentally gets engaged. And now they're, like, trying to force Susan into engagement.
They just really want to have a wedding, desperately.
Yeah, well, it would go well with the human sacrifice. It's like you go wedding and then human sacrifice.
That's why this episode's called The Bride of Sacrifice. See, it's not just Mad Libs.
Wait, is that playing on two things? Is there a sacrifice happening with the doctor as well? Is the doctor sacrificing something?
Is the doctor also a bride?
His dignity, maybe?
Well, I mean, he's eventually gonna have to give her up. Like, I think he does like her. I don't know if he wants to be, like, super romantically whatever, but he
likes her. The time they spend together.
Any later doctor would be like, yeah, come travel with me. You can come live on my TARDIS.
She asks, and he's like,
don't want you cramping my style.
Look, I've already got two people in here.
And then we have, like, an incredibly cute scene between Ian and the doctor. It's just a straight up comedy scene, basically, but I really enjoyed it. Where the doctor's like, oh, hey, I got engaged. And Ian's like, oh, cool. Wait, what?
The doctor gets a present from the gardener with a clue first of how to get back in the tomb tunnel thing.
I don't remember that.
He finds out about the tunnel existing.
Yeah, okay. the tunnel that's covered by styrofoam.
Yeah, and that's when he tells Ian.
And then that's when the cute scene happens. And it's just Ian just like ribbing the doctor, yeah. And the doctor like, bleh, bleh.
Like, that would happen to you. The doctor's like, make fun of me.
Yeah, it's really cute. That's probably my favorite scene in this entire serial, just because it's cute.
And I did not write down that it was cute, but it was cute. All I wrote down was doctor tells Ian, and that's it.
Do they immediately afterwards go into the tunnel?
Barbara finds out Susan is going to be punished for having opinions. For some reason, this is to happen before the sacrifice. Somehow this creates a dilemma, and I don't remember how.
Yeah, I tend to just
because if it happened after the sacrifice, then she could have been like, see, I'm a god, and I'd say don't punish her. Because she wanted to delay the sacrifice so that the eclipse would be over, and that would prove that she was a god, and she would be able to be like, now don't touch Susan.
And then Ian and the warrior guy, who have apparently been sleeping together, wake up and sneak out separately.
Yeah, well, they're BFFs now.
Yeah, which means they sleep together, because that's what BFFs do in the 60s. They sleep together.
What you didn't see is Ian showing him what else he could do with his thumb.
Nope.
No?
No.
That's not his thumb. Okay, so so Ian sneaks out, and then the warrior guy sneaks out after him. And Ian joins up with the doctor at the tunnel.
Yeah, and the doctor's like, take this cover.
Like a big square stone piece, and it just kind of, you can move it aside, and there's a tunnel.
Yeah, and Ian is desperately trying to move that.
Like it's heavy.
Like it's heavy, and it's clearly not heavy at all. That is a common thing. Pretend that this prop is heavy when you can hear, like, the styrofoam scratching against the other styrofoam.
Or in the case of Marinus, where you could just see it.
So you could just see the end of the log with styrofoam.
No, not painted, just...
just straight up styrofoam. But yeah, so like, Ian goes into the hole, and he's like, doctor, keep an eye out. And the doctor is the worst.
Yeah, the warrior guy shows up.
The warrior guy is standing right behind the doctor while the doctor's staring in after Ian. And then the doctor turns around and is like, oh, I should have been looking out. I was walking. I was just walking.
The doctor is the worst.
What up? what's going on, Ixta? Ixta's like, this is going to leave a draft. Let me put this stone back.
Like water, this whole thing's gonna fill up with water, so I gotta put the stone back or else it'll flood
the garden.
And then the cliffhanger is Ian's toes get wet.
That's actually not a terrible
legitimately worried for him.
It's not a bad cliffhanger. I mean, that is actually having a character in some kind of danger instead of just
I fell down for no reason.
Yeah, it didn't feel like a cheap cliffhanger. It felt like a decent cliffhanger. Anyway, that was the end of The Bride of Sacrifice.
And then the thing happens that happens all the time, is when, like, a thing happens that creates some suspense, it is immediately solved.
Right. In the Day of Darkness. By the way, that's the episode we're on now.
And the water is flooding in on Action Ian's toes, but he manages to escape just in the nick of all the time in the world, and finds the room with the TARDIS.
I actually like that little montage, like, of him, like, climbing up and going through stuff. Like, it was kind of nicely done in a way that I've not seen them do much yet. Like, there was, like, some nice editing and...
Except for the fact that the peril had not yet reached a point where it matters.
That's true, but I mean, I'll forget
There's
that.
Not enough water for us to care. Like, there should have been more water by the time he gets to that point.
Yeah, but I mean, I was talking about how, like, they faded out, and then they fade back in of him, like, crawling through places, and it looked nice. That I kind of dug, like, the fading in and out of him progressing.
I'm just thinking of it from a suspense perspective, where it's like, if there were more water, there would be more suspense. But I guess they couldn't afford more water, because water is super expensive.
All that money's on trapdoors.
Which, there's a trapdoor underneath the corpse of the high priest god thing from the very beginning of this serial, and that's where Ian shows up coincidentally. Like, he gets a rope and ties it to the trapdoor.
Like a belt thing? Strap of some sort?
And he's like, I'm gonna, you know, take it out through this trapdoor so I can keep it propped open because I can't go back through the water place.
Yeah, he makes like a makeshift door handle type of thing where it's like you can grab the rope from the outside and pull the door open.
He's like, yeah, hey, let's pull it open and keep it open, and then the rope snaps, right?
No, I think he just lays it there so that he can get back in, and the rope snaps at a later moment.
Well, what happens next? Because that's what I have next, is rope snapped. I didn't take a lot of notes.
Barbara shows up, and the doctor is worried for like 2 seconds before Ian pops up from behind a stone.
Oh, right, yeah. Why did he hide? It was the doctor going, Barbara, Barbara! And Ian's like, I gotta hide, someone's coming. He's saying Barbara. It's definitely the doctor.
Well, he couldn't read that in the script, because it just said a voice in the script, probably. I don't know. Just extrapolating based on nothing.
It's Ian. So he's uncertain of things he ought to be certain of.
Yeah, but they all brief each other on information we, the viewers, already know. Reverse exposition! And Susan is left in a room with the warrior, who sets up the tension by saying that Ian is dead. Whereupon Action Ian is instantly ruining the suspense by sneaking up and knocking him out. That's another moment of, like, you have a moment here where it's like, you could really milk this moment of Susan thinking Ian is dead, but nope, he shows up immediately after she is told that he's dead.
Well, this is like the opposite problem that we've been having. Generally, it's like, we know, move on, do something. This time, it's, you're moving a little too fast, almost.
You're not letting anything
happen.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, the only thing they let breathe are moments where nothing is happening. That's the problem with the show structurally, is when stuff is happening, it's happening, like, too quickly. And when stuff is not happening, it's taking forever. It's a two-sided problem. They spend too much time on nothing and not enough time on suspense and actual storytelling.
So what's next?
Everybody joins back up by the tomb door, and the strap breaks when they pull it. That's when they put the strap over the stone, because, and, oh, this happens twice. The doctor is like, we should put the thing over the thing and pull. And then they don't do that, and then they start pulling, and he's like, oh, we should put the strap over the thing and pull. And then they do that, and that's when it breaks.
So it didn't even work.
Yeah, to the sound of an email notification, it breaks.
I know exactly what part you're talking about, because I also had the same reaction. I checked my phone for a second.
When that happened, I paused it, and I went back, and I recorded that sound, and I put it into my phone, and I went into the settings on my phone that I haven't had for too long. It's a used phone, but I always have a used phone. And I tried to find the setting where I could use, like, a custom notification sound for text messaging, and I couldn't find it anywhere, so I was disappointed, because I wanted to make that my text notification.
Send that to me, and I'll edit it into the podcast.
And I will set it to my text notification.
And it'll go in right here.
So Butcher orders Warrior Guy to frame Ian for hitting Otlock with a stick. He does, because he ain't got nothing better to do. Otlock falls for it and declares Barbara a false goddess.
Ixtar almost screws it up, too, because he's like, it was Ian! Ah! Just, he's like so overexcited about like framing Ian that he almost blows it, but he doesn't. But he almost does, because he's an idiot.
Which Ian, by the way, just kind of picks it up and is like, what is this, a murder weapon? I should hold it and look at it and stand over the body for the second time in my life.
That happened in the Keys of Marinus as well.
He doesn't think these things through, and he doesn't learn from his mistakes.
That's Ian. Character description, man. Okay, so Doctor and Gardner chat for a bit and postpone the wedding. As she volunteers to talk to Otlock.
And he's making a pulley at this point. Or he's starting to, like, carve out this wheel thing.
I like that they're like, you know what we need? We need a pulley. Ah, that doesn't exist yet, does it?
I just make the doctor carve it.
I guess we'll make one.
And then Orlok is disheartened. He's like, I'm going to go into the wilderness.
Yeah, he has lost his faith.
Fuck all you guys. Peace out.
You guys, I'm going home.
So, we don't have a guy on our side.
Yeah,
anymore.
We don't have an ally anymore, because it's not useful to the story. What? Just gonna send him away.
He got put on a bus, as they say.
Yeah, so not only does he not believe anymore, but he's gone so that he can't even be convinced. You know, our team is the good team.
But are they, though?
They're not. They're assholes.
They're like, what if you're not really the reincarnation? What if you're just a grave robber and a false god, and where is the lie?
Then the next thing is Vince.
Line.
When Barbara talks to Otlock, he says it might be possible to save Susan, but not Ian. I'm not sure why. And then the Otlock gives the gardener a thing. And that's when Doctor's fixing the strap and Barbara's talking and the Butcher shows up and says the Otlock has gone into the wilderness.
Okay, the thing is like the deed or the title or whatever to all of his worldly possessions. Like, basically, whoever has that owns all his wealth. And so they're going to use it to bribe someone to do something?
Was it Ixtar, I think, maybe? I don't remember. I have no clue. I'm so lost now.
I'm pretty lost, too.
Everything's sort of started, like, collapsing towards the end just to get the thing over.
The gardener distracts a guard with the ornament thing, and Ian knocks the guard out. With a light tap on the shoulder.
Yeah, trying to give it to him, to, like, bribe him, and the guy's like, I don't know. And Ian is just like, I am tired of this.
Ian solves things with his thumb.
With lightly tapping someone with his thumb. And he's like, someone had to make something happen.
And he makes a quip, because he's a man, and that's what man characters do. They knock a guy out and then say something.
What, do they rush to the temple?
The gardener grabs Susan and runs, while Ian stays behind to steal the guard's helmet. The bird helmet.
Because we need that helmet one more time. It was probably the best part of the episode.
the helmet?
I'm a big fan of the helmet.
And then we have the
Butcher and the Warrior Guy do unnecessary exposition in the bushes about their plan just to fill time, because we already know basically what's going to happen.
Right. That's why I don't like put notes down about that stuff, because the show repeats itself a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of reiterating exposition just in case.
You got to fill out 20 something minutes here.
Yeah, let's have them say this thing again that they said before. The gardener returns Susan to the doctor, and the doctor is like, okay, thanks, bye.
The doctor says something along the lines of, oh, I'm really happy to see you, but I'll tell you about it in a second, because right now things are still happening.
And then we have the second sacrifice, right?
The Butcher and the Warrior Guy find the guard. The Butcher orders the warrior to kill him for some reason.
Because they betrayed him, even though he didn't really.
No, he got knocked out.
It's just to show that the Butcher is blood hungry.
It's just the kind of guy he is.
Then do we get to the second sacrifice? When does the second sacrifice happen?
Sacrifice time!
Yeah!
Butcher tries to kill Barbara, but Action Ian, posing as guard, stops him.
That's why he took the helmet.
And then we actually have an okay fight scene.
Yeah!
Action Ian and Warrior Guide do silly battle in their animal hats. That's what I've written down.
It's still slow, but I gotta say, it's the best fight scene in the whole serial. It's not as bad.
Well, the thing that makes it the best fight scene is the fact that Action Ian is wearing his bird hat, and Warrior Guy is wearing his cat hat.
Also, they're moving a bit faster. Like,
it's cat versus bird, man. It's symbolic.
And I really like the noise of the paddle hitting the shield. That sounds better than the clock, clock from the paddles hitting the paddles. Sound-wise, it worked better. And also, it was a bit faster. I mean, it wasn't a great fight scene.
It felt like it was conceivably a fight instead of kind of a slow, awkward, aggressive dance.
Ian throws the warrior guy down the depth that was established in part one.
Just kind of... Hardcore?
Kills him, maybe. Yeah. Or paralyzed, at least. Something. He's definitely hurt.
This is Ian's second kill, by the way.
Who did he kill before?
He cut that bridge.
Oh, yeah, but those are like reanimated night creature things. They probably weren't real people. Real.
What is Ian's job at the school, by the way?
Science teacher. He's a science teacher in Barbara's history.
See, science teacher is not the kind of job that you would expect based on just Ian's personality. He is so far from the science teacher type. Well, I guess an American science teacher, conceivably, but he's not. He's a British science teacher. You would expect him to be more science teachery.
And less dumb.
Less dumb, less violent.
No, that's exactly what I expect out of a science teacher. Not a scientist, mind you, a science teacher. A science teacher will knows what they know, and everything they don't know is wrong. I'm offending someone right now. I'm sorry. Some science teacher is like, that is not true. But I'm saying I could see it as a character trait for this character. Don't be mad at me, science teachers. You know things.
Well, I already pretty much said American science teacher as a type that he could be, but he's British, so you would expect a little bit more. I don't know. I don't know what British science teachers are like, but I get the sense. Anyway.
So, you guys are stereotypical assholes. No, I'm just joking.
Well, that's totally true. Warrior guy is probably dead, and Butcher is about to sacrifice the other dude.
And he does. He sacrifices hunky victim.
You are just super hung up on that guy.
They call him the perfect victim for a reason. He's perfect. So yeah, the bad guy does the bad thing.
Yeah, and then they leave? Is that...
Well, they're by the TARDIS. Barbara's all, what's the point of time traveling if we can't change anything? Spoken like a true history teacher. What's the point of learning history when you can't do anything about it? Lament.
I imagine part of, like, your interest in history could be, I don't know, like, you
avoiding
read...
mistakes or...
Yeah, yeah, you study history to learn from it. That's a thing people say. I can imagine the want to kind of
fix
right
things.
Wrongs
yeah.
and be frustrated with that.
But then you have to relearn everything and reteach everything because it's all different now. You have to change all of history and then go back and... Suddenly you're fired because you taught all that history that's not true anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, at this point, she doesn't know if she's going to go back or not. And she's like, if I'm stuck doing this thing, I might as well fix some things if I can.
Yeah, I'm going to get fired for not being there anyway. Might as well change all of history.
I think it's a very kind of human response, and that's kind of the point, to be like, we're here in this situation, and I just have to kind of let it go and let it happen, I guess? And that doesn't feel right. Like, if... there's people to help, I ought to help them. But also, culture is a thing and you're being ethnocentric, so maybe just go somewhere else.
Yeah, and saying, like, what's the point of time traveling?
She actually says, what's the point of traveling through time and space? And really, the space doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, no, you can change space.
I mean, you can change time then, just... the way everyone has to do it.
I can sort of understand her being like, I don't want people killing people. I don't necessarily agree with her becoming a god, but I mean, I can sort of see like, oh, this dude's going to kill this dude, and I don't want him to kill people.
Like,
that's
it's very,
nice.
Like I said, it's very Fires of Pompeii, yeah. Which I think is actually this idea is executed better.
And then he's like, you did sort of, you helped Orclock, or whatever his name is.
A clock.
You helped 4 o'clock. Then if you can help one or two people, that's, you know, that's something at least. It's like he forgot that by Fires of Pompeii and needed Donna to remind him.
Because I've just written down, they all fuck off into the TARDIS, the end. 4 episodes, very little accomplished.
No, they didn't really accomplish much. I mean, I guess that someone wrote that end like, and that's the point? Right? Yeah.
But Susan has a lot of vast tech knowledge now, so that's something.
I'm sure that'll come in handy later in her life.
I mean, they didn't really do much, but I did really like this serial. I think it's shorter, so it doesn't drag as much.
It is tighter than a lot of the other early serials.
Was there a cliffhanger?
There is a tag at the end where the TARDIS is acting up and they've probably landed somewhere.
But they're moving.
Yeah, so we landed on something. Or in something.
Barbara, what does that mean?
Are you just saying things?
Why you gotta take it? She does that all the time where it's like, why you gotta take it and make it weird? All the time. Because I remember this episode ends and they're like, they all kind of shuffle into the TARDIS and then like...
Oh, and the doctor had to break up with his girlfriend.
Yes.
That was sad.
He says that he will always remember her. That's what he says.
Bullshit.
Yeah, no, he's forgotten about her by next week.
And then she's like, can I come with you? And he's like...
Do you see how small that box is? Despite what you may have heard, it's not really bigger on the inside.
We're already like 4 people? That's like a lot for that. I mean, it has 4 sides. That's like all of the sides covered. I don't think we can let another You know, I would, but,
Okay, well, bye!
That was the Aztecs. I liked it. I liked it too.
It had Ian taking somebody down with just his thumb, him looking very worried in an adorable bird hat, Barbara being just in charge. Less Susan, which is always an improvement. Ah, Susan. I want to like her.
But when your entire characterization is screaming.
My favorite thing that she did all serial was go, look, cartoons! And you're just like, Les. She knows all this, like, math, like theoretical physics that she can do in her sleep. She can read textbooks in a matter of, like, a couple of minutes or whatever. And then gets excited by the existence of cartoons and screams whenever she sees another human being.
She did it in this episode, too, when she first saw the butcher. She's like, Susan, it's a person! Calm down!
You know people.
Good God. It wasn't even like he came out of anywhere. He was just standing there, just like hanging out, and she walks by him and goes, because he's got face paint on or something.
She likes to scream at things and fall over on occasion.
Like, those are her defining characteristics.
So, yeah.
She's very much of the era.
So her not being in the serial so much was a plus. And also, the doctor and the gardener I thought was cute. Even when, like, the doctor and Ian are talking about the gardener and him getting married, that was cute. There's a lot of good, like, character stuff, I feel like, in this episode. I liked it a lot.
In spite of some repetition and missed opportunities for suspense, it was a lot better paced than a lot of other early serials.
I mean, that's not a high bar, but yes.
Yeah, it has the problems, but it has them less than a lot of the others, which is why I'm kind of glad that this is the one that I had to rewatch, because there are some really slow ones.
I do feel like the show is kind of starting to get its footing. It's starting to figure out what it wants to do. There has been more, like, cute character stuff, and I've been like, yes, show me more of this. And I feel like the show is figuring that out. At the same, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like it works a lot better when it's just the characters hanging out or having, like, little talks among themselves rather than this sort of overly complicated plot thing that they do a lot. Like, we have to go do this and then have a cliffhanger and do this and have a cliffhanger. You sometimes get lost or just don't care or it drags. But the character stuff generally works.
Yeah, there are so many times that we've been doing this podcast that I've been like, and then for the next 4 episodes, I don't even remember what happens, but this cute scene between these two characters happens, and it's my favorite, and that's generally, like, plot stuff happens, and I just kind of zone out for a while.
And the plots are generally so needlessly complicated.
Well, either they're needlessly complicated, or it's like, I've already have all this information already, and, like, this scene's still happening, so I'm not gaining anything from it, it's just filling time.
And it's generally like there is a villain. For example, this one, it's the butcher, and more than Marco Polo, it was Tagana. They're out to get the main characters and keep getting foiled over and over again. So you just like, all right, let's do this plan. let's marry off Susan.
They're basically Wile E. Coyote-ing it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think this could very easily be whittled down to a 42-minute episode. Like, very easily. And still have, like, moments where it could possibly be dragging.
Like I said, it does drag a bit, but it drags the least of most of the ones I think all the ones we've seen so far.
And there's enough to it that it's enjoyable to watch. I'm a fan. I like it.
Thumbs up.
Could kill you with this thumb.
Oh no! Don't kill me with your thumbs up.
It's good for the time. Definitely a high point of the season.
Next time we will be doing The Censorites. It's a six-parter.
Who were The Censorites again? Oh, right. You haven't watched it yet, so I'm not even gonna...
We don't know.
I've remembered every serial we've seen so far, because I've watched all of The First Doctor. I don't remember The Censorites at all. I've remembered all the ones we watched up to this point, like at least vaguely. I don't remember anything about The Censorites. So this will be a bit of like... Oh, right, that's what that was. Okay, I don't remember.
That worries me.
Yeah, it probably means it's bad. Do you have any final thoughts, Tony?
Ian in a bird hat.
I'm gonna say Ian in his thumb. Vince, do you have any final thoughts?
We've got enough people on the TARDIS, it's...
Fantastic. And again, if you want to check out Vince's stuff, swinglish.nu. Is there any other like links or anything you'd want to...
Well, there's youtube.com/swinglish. There's soundcloud.com/VincentEL. There's soundcloud.com/ill_Eden or youtube.com/illEdenpage. Thanks for having me. Please have me again. Because this was fun, and I love the show. And it's seriously, and I'm not even being a thing. It's my favorite show, podcast-wise, right now. And I listen to a lot of podcasts.
What?
You've been on enough podcasts. No, I'm just
The podcast is kind of full right now.